The University of Detroit Mercy presents another brand new episode of Ask the Professor. Today's program was recorded using Zoom video conferencing technology.
The University Tower Chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with the University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my left, to somebody else's right, or who knows what, it's Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Excellent. So you were kind of doing the...
I didn't know which way you're going, because on my Zoom, you're beneath me. You're the center square today.
I am beneath you. You know that? It's true.
You're directly beneath me.
Oh, this is like a bad bunk bed right about now with bed wetters. I mean, this is strange.
So, you didn't have to embellish that, Dave.
Oh, sorry.
Dave, how are things on the other side of Berkeley?
I'm on 2 hours of sleep right about now. I'm a bit of a zombie.
Okay, well.
Oh, you show well.
Things are going well, other than the lack of slumber?
For the most part. A little crazed, a little busy, so all's good.
Okay. Busy is good. It's a pandemic, you know?
I don't know. I could use a little bit of sleep, that's all.
Okay, well, I hope that you're able to achieve sleeping very, very soon.
If I was still driving to CCS, I would just tell my students I get plenty of sleep on the freeway, so.
That's right. Someone who is acknowledging this fact, wondering just how true it might be, is Professor Beth Oljar.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't really want to think about the consequences of that being true, but, you know, I guess your luck has held up to this point, so.
Just go for it from there. We need to know your license plate, Dave, so that if we do see you, we can, like, take the first exit.
Yes.
Know? No, Matt,
Turn around.
Yeah, when I go southbound Woodward, I just throw the car into neutral during rush hour and just let them push me along.
If you were in home Oregon, everything would be orange anyway. So Drew's sister has been sending us pictures or posting pictures to Facebook about what it looks like at home now. And of course, you know, 500,000 people have basically been evacuated or lost their homes in Oregon, which is kind of a record we've never had.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Somebody basically blanket texted me the other day, Beth, and said, OMG, Google Orange San Francisco right now. And it's like suddenly the text stream just like takes off because some of those pictures of Golden Gate, 10 a.m., it's apocalyptic. It's just incredible.
But the pictures from Oregon in what looked like fairly affluent neighborhoods with wide streets, there was just nothing. There were not timbers standing in these homes. They were just wiped out.
Where are the 500,000 people going, Beth?
Well, either to parts of the state that are unaffected, which I assume would be in the eastern part of the state, although Medford, which is in southern Oregon, I know the community right next to it has been devastated, and I think Medford was hit there pretty hard. I assume they're going east.
Okay.
I mean, we're used to, you know, ash being all over everything. That happened when St. Helens blew, right? And everybody got used to this half inch of crud that was everywhere, but not things just being utterly destroyed.
Yeah, who doesn't like a good coating of crud on a, cool fall day? No, seriously, though, I mean, there is a weather pattern. That's coming where we get affected by those, fires as well. There is more chance of haze. There's more chance of fog where we live when it comes to things like that. The weather pattern comes across the state of Michigan from west to east. So we are affected by it.
I heard you could hear they were getting plumes of smoke as far east as Alabama.
Incredible. Wow. Absolutely incredible.
This is global warming. So. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Matt, did you see that one meme with San Francisco and comparing that to Blade Runner?
I get the reference. I can tell you that much.
The color match was unreal. So
I thought that you were going to tell me about the one where it's a skeleton clinging to a chain link fence with sort of a blast of fire blowing over it. And underneath it, it said, "It's a boy."
Oh, like in terms of, like,
ooh.
Absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible.
San Francisco is such a beautiful city.
Yes,
yeah, it is.
Professor Dan Maggio is also here with us today. You look like you're in, regular sort of grayscale mode.
I am wearing a t-shirt today.
Oh, well,
which is unusual. And I'm glad we live in a state that sees relatively few natural disasters.
I would have to agree with that statement.
Hurricanes and fires and earthquakes, we are pretty lucky.
Mostly what's the worst we get?
Ice storms.
Yeah, I would say the worst we get is like, you know, Dutch Girl was closed for about 6 months and we had to deal with that.
I have a Dutch Girl story. On Wednesday, I was driving home at 8 o'clock from class and I drove by Dutch Girl. They were open and there was a long line outside at 8 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even think donut shops were open at night.
They are open when they're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And this is the first time they've been open in 6 months.
That's a lot of stored up sugar needs.
And I'm surprised that they
had it on my calendar.
You could be open and sell donuts through the window. So there must have been a reason why they chose to stay closed. Anyway, they're obviously very popular and people were waiting for donuts on Wednesday night.
The Facebook headline was Dutch Girl to open next week, comma, gives us reason to live. I'm like, at least they're not, cutting any corners.
Yeah.
Professor Jim Tubbs is here looking pretty spry in his light green.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Count Tubbs.
Hello, G.
Hello, how are you?
Elizabeth. How are things you said? I said it's been a week. You were like, join the club. How was your week, Jim?
Well, it's just been interesting. I mean, this teaching when you're not seeing anybody is just weird. Just weird.
It is.
Because, you know, let's face it, teaching is a performance art anyway. And when there's nobody to perform to that you can see, nobody to make eye contact with, no eyes to see if they're getting it or not. Mm-hmm. It's just.
But then I'm not having all the flop sweat, which is kind of nice.
Well, again, yes.
This is what I have in front of my camera. Eyes in front of my camera, so I make eye contact with the camera.
No, that's a good idea because
that way I'm at least staring at camera, not like looking downward at my shoes.
Yeah.
I mean, the PowerPoint slide takes up most of the screen, so I'm just like a little bitty thing in the corner, unless I'm introducing them to Mia, which I did this morning. But
you're like Kazoo from the Flintstones. You just sort of pop in the corner and you only see their head, and magic things happen whenever he speaks.
Those, of course, being the dulcet tones of Professor Jeff Boats.
Yeah, but that would do.
You get the bonus points for mentioning the great Kazoo today.
Yeah, that or Mixelplick, right, from the Super Friends, where you only see their head and then the goofy stuff happens.
That's right. If he says his name backwards, he goes back to the dark dimension. That's right. Absolutely. So what do you do to remind yourself to look into the camera, Jeff?
Well, actually, as you can see, my camera doesn't work on my computer. It's about 10 years old, the one I use, so I guess I have to make up for the lack of my mug on their screen with as many goofy, stupid math jokes as I can think of. That seems to be the trick.
I feel like you've saved up a good number of those, though. You're good to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like dropped one in Calc 3 this morning. You know, Calc 3 joke, right? What do you get when you cross a mountain climber with a goat? Nothing. You can't cross scalars. you got to know some calculus to get that one. But.
I'm looking at Dan.
Because a mountain goat scales up mountains. Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
All right.
A little epsilon bit of humor there. Epsilon slightly greater than zero.
Let me tell you, this is a program you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. Very nice. You can send us the questions in a number of ways, emailing us at atp@udmercy.edu, find us on Facebook and or Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. I'll read the header paragraph here. Well, professors, it looks like you made it through the last three rounds, and I hope that you enjoy this one because it may get a bit more challenging. Welcome to part four of the saga of this former Detroit Mercy student setting up fierce queries against some of the apparently best brains in higher ed. This time, I advise you not to get too comfortable. I'm raising the bar to 19 of 20 to
play. Whoa, 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 whoa. Wait,
we're some of the best brains in higher ed.
Oh my gosh, you all are cracking me up. This set of questions from various categories like the previous are, or maybe like, the rivers of lava, the traps and monsters that so many brave women and men of fantasy and adventure stories have tried to brave, overcome these mental challenges if you dare, and if you must, I assure you that it won't necessarily be a picnic inside a boiling volcano. Ooh, there's a bonus question at the end, too. But again, I wish you the best. Natalie Bohe, Detroit Mercy alumna 2011, from Sterling Heights, Michigan. Let's see what we've got cooking here. She writes in the what we like to call the Kimberly Richards style with lots of great background information.
Cool.
Vicks VapoRub is a classic treatment for cough and cold. It has become a cultural touchstone in the Hispanic and Latinx community. Its active ingredients are camphor, eucalyptus, and menthol. Name any one of its inactive ingredients. So a non-pharmaceutical glycerin-based.
Petroleum jelly?
Petroleum jelly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to give you for glycerin, Beth, the petrol atom, which was mentioned by both of these gentlemen. That's definitely one of them for sure. It also includes cedar oil, nutmeg oil, thymol, which for the record is the spice that's found in rosemary, and turpentine.
Turpentine. Really? Oh,
and yeah. It only works if your primary caretaker puts it on you.
Right.
It only works if your mom puts it on or whoever is your.
It's like tickling. You can't serve yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to sing Soft Kitty when you put it on?
I do not. No.
Baby Shark.
Yeah, exactly. Baby Shark. It says here that Vicks VapoRub can be used to treat fungus, acne, pain, insomnia, and headaches, as well as repelling mosquitoes. So this is quite the versatile.
Really, on the mosquitoes?
I can see where it would repel mosquitoes.
Insomnia?
Apparently. I believe
the eucalyptus oil soothes you to sleep.
Right, exactly. What it says here is that some have been told to put a drop or two in their beverages. Like, that's pushing it a little bit for me.
Way too far, yes.
But, interesting, interesting.
How do you get it into a drop?
We
heat it up.
Gravity.
Gravity.
Just
gravity.
A dollop. You could say dollop. Would that help, Jim?
A dollop.
Or are any of those ingredients poisonous?
Probably.
They're not good things to eat, I can tell you that. Maybe. Professors, in November of 1983 on PBS, Sesame Street had a television special that had the gang in an overnight adventure where they accidentally get locked in the Metropolitan Museum of Art overnight. And Big Bird and Snuffleupagus befriend a 4,000-year-old Egyptian prince, by the way, played by a very young Aram Chowdhury. What was the episode titled? It had a good kid name.
A Can't Night at the Museum?
Oh, that's a good guess, but that's not it.
Was it Deal with the King Tut exhibit?
Meeting the Mummy?
Hint, that's a good one too. The hint is the title pertains to Cookie Monster's habit of pretty much chewing up everything.
Eating the Met?
Don't eat the pictures is what it was called.
Don't eat the pictures. Right.
Makes sense from the Sesame Street perspective. Yeah.
And don't shred them like Banksy either.
Yeah, exactly. Or halfway, right? It said that the actor that played the prince actually died about 10 years later, suddenly. That's kind of sad.
Hmm.
Some weird curse involved there. But
mm-hmm, exactly.
Like a Howard Carter thing?
Right, cool. Right. Tutankhamun.
Or Bruce Lee and his son?
Yeah.
Brandon Lee, The Crow, absolutely. About time of year to watch The Crow. Just like to
great movie.
Great movie, great time of year. How many pounds did the heaviest circular pizza weigh?
Ooh.
49.
No.
Thin crust or deep dish?
It was huge.
It 49 is a little low.
Oh.
750.
750 is really, really low.
A ton?
That's a little low.
Good grief.
Good grief. Where was this pizza?
This pizza was made in 1990 in Norwood, South Africa.
And was it the size of the country?
Yeah. Did it take the whole town?
Well, what? I mean, I can give you the other numbers that will probably get you at least to the right order of magnitude.
What did the pan look like?
They didn't use one.
Yeah. 9,920 pounds of flour, 3,360 pounds and 1,984 pounds of chopped tomatoes, 1,763 pounds of mushrooms.
Like 3 tons.
So probably more like 8 or 10 tons.
So I think Dan's been the closest here. It was 26,883 pound pizza is what it was.
Okay.
13 tons. 13
tons. Yeah. Wow. So what I want to know is how did they cook it? Because yeah. if they didn't cook it, to me, it's a big pile of stuff. It's not a pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm less impressed.
122 feet and 8 inches across. Yeah.
I guess my question is, what did they do with it after they recorded the event? Did they serve it up?
They invited 3 other countries to come in and have lunch.
How long would it take to slice it? I mean, just to...
I would just hate to see it go to waste.
No, it's true. It's true.
You're listening to a special edition of Ask the Professor, in which each of the 6 professors participating in this recording session were connecting to each other from different locations thanks to Zoom video conferencing technology. We're grateful to those listeners who submitted questions for today's program, and we welcome your questions at atp@udmercy.edu. The professors return to answer more questions in just 80 seconds. But first... it's an Ask the Professor presidential election flashback.
When was the first inaugural ball held, and who was the hostess?
Dolly Madison.
That's right.
No, I'm referring to the donuts. Next time we should get Dolly Madison donuts.
Oh, well, that's the right answer, yeah, though. Yeah. Want to guess the year?
1813. This is an inaugural ball?
Mm-hmm.
1809.
That's right. Oh, right. 1809.
That's when it had to be, isn't
My
it?
My gosh. Just before she fled to McLean, Virginia, and they were burning the White House.
Well, there were several years in there.
Yeah, there or something. On the back of the $20 bill is a view of the south side of the White House, featuring 2 magnolia trees. What president planted them, and why?
Andrew Jackson.
That's right.
Was it in honor of his wife, his deceased wife, Rachel?
Exactly. That's it.
How
That's
did you
it.
Know about magnolia trees?
Because they used to be around Tara. So Daddy had to sell all the woods. It was the death duties. Oh, I don't know how Daddy survived the war.
But we know how you did, Daddy.
Trading with those Yankees, George.
Scalawags, right?
And yes, what's in there?
Vote and make your voice count. Election Day is Tuesday, November 3rd.
How about this one from Natalie Bohe from Sterling Heights, Michigan? Barbasol, the product?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can be used for cleaning surfaces and treating sunburn. True or false?
Yeah, it was a
I think so, problem. Yes. I know it can be used for cleaning surfaces. Yeah. I expect it can be used for sunburn, too.
Yes, it has a cooling effect. That is exactly what Natalie's got here. Apparently, that's a true statement.
Hey, you can use a Barbasol can to store dinosaur embryos.
You can.
Oh,
Jurassic Park.
Well, that's right. That's exactly right. Mm. Store the embryos. Store the embryos.
Poor embryos. Mm.
Combine the name of a famous child star with that of a famous person with autism. What name do you get?
Temple Grandin.
Shirley Temple Grandin. There you go. We're doing this Jeopardy style where we do the portmanteau. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's see here. A YouTube video uploaded in June of 2010 showed a parade that involved delivery trucks carrying what item from what confectionery company?
What year again was it?
It was June of 2010 is what it says here. The parade of trucks was driving down the Ohio Turnpike with a police escort. This is kind of interesting.
Last ever Necco wafers?
No, well, that's a pretty good guess. They did go out of business recently.
Hey,
right?
Dan,
Hershey bars?
Yeah, no, that's Hershey, PA, right? So what was it, Ohio?
Ohio Turnpike. That's Toledo to Cleveland.
I'll give you the last clue if you can think about it. Apparently, they're from a confectioner called Mally's. Malleys. Does that ring any bells?
Mallow cup.
Apparently, Mally's is a confectioner in the Cleveland area, very well known for its chocolate strawberries. The parade was documented happening in the dead of night because they were afraid people were going to try to derail it to steal the chocolate strawberries. So under cover of night, they decided to deliver the chocolate strawberries. Pretty interesting.
Deliver to where?
It doesn't say.
Just to the store? Oh.
Yeah, just to the stores, I think. Yeah.
They're not that good. I mean...
Yeah, really, they're not that good. They're okay.
They're going to attack the trucks or something.
It's not like the Mayo household in pork buns.
That's right.
Right. I knew that was coming.
And during Lent.
Okay. The North African country of Tunisia is home to what landmark, which is a residential peculiarity? This is interesting, too.
What?
They film Star Wars. Is that anything to do with that?
That's a reasonable thing, but that's not exactly what's being asked for here.
Tunisia.
Asia. Mm-hmm.
It's a residential peculiarity? Or
it's a residential peculiarity. What do they have in Tunisia that is out of the ordinary?
Tunisia.
Residential peculiarity.
No idea. A lot of sand.
Well,
they don't have any freeways.
A lot of sand. What I was thinking is residential peculiarity. So this is a very out of the ordinary place for a human to live. And they actually lived there.
Clausen.
is our weekly reference to the great city of Clausen.
Is it like caves or mountains? Or
Yeah, Dan, you got it. It's the world's largest underground cave home system.
Oh.
And the people live outside on the outskirts of, let's see, Mata Mata. You'll find a small community of Berbers that have lived in these caves through a big open hole in the ground for hundreds of years.
Yeah. Kind of like Cappadocia in Turkey. Yeah.
Or kind of like Wyandotte, the salt mines.
Things are getting a little salty.
Salty.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, how about the infamous corpse flower, which is endemic to Sumatra, is very purple, but totally stinks when it blooms on the most unexpected occasions. Do you have any idea what the scientific name for that plant is?
No.
It's a very interesting name.
What would be Latin for Limburger?
Right, exactly. That's the direction we're going here.
Plantus puus.
I got to give partial credit for that.
No, I'm thinking
Plantus stinkus.
Thanatos.
Deodorant.
Now, wait a second. Beth, what did you just say?
I was trying to think of the Latin for corpse, but odoriferous
scadzucus.
Greek for death, which is Thanatos.
Thanatos. Yeah. For a second there, I thought you were going in the right direction. You're actually relatively close. Amorphophallus titanum. I was hoping that somebody would gravitate to the big idea. So big stink is basically what you're getting out of that. So you weren't all that far off, honestly.
I was going to go fungus among us, but that wasn't going to work. So
Exactly.
It doesn't smell bad if you're, a flesh-eating fly. I'm sure it smells lovely.
Smells lovely.
If
exactly
you like
right.
Thank you for that.
Flesh, right, if you're that kind of a critter.
Let's see if you know your Michigan history here. Once upon a time, in the mid-19th century in Michigan, there was a kingdom on Beaver Island. The king was a Mormon who made himself a king. When he believed that God desired him to reign. For 6 years he reigned until he was assassinated, sadly, in 1856. Do you remember his name?
No, but I can picture the story and I can picture the sign on the island. It's not Scott, is it? No. James?
Yeah, James is the first name. That's good enough there. His name was James Strang. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's it. Yes.
Basically, split off from the Mormon church, declared himself, chief of the island. And he also, for a short time, apparently was a Michigan Congress member. So that's pretty interesting.
Oh, that's fitting.
Now, if Stephanie had been here, she would know that.
She would have known that because they go to Beaver Island.
Because they go to Beaver Island.
A beautiful, beautiful place, by the way. Is it possible to cut a cake without a knife or spatula?
Sure.
I would say yes.
Well, define what it means.
Item could you use to
do string. Use wire?
A wire or string?
Yeah.
This is Natalie's interpretation. It'd be great if I heard some stories of the professors telling how they've used dental floss to cut pastries. It's like, you know what? We'll get back to you on that.
Why slow it down? I mean, as a person who's competed in numerous pie and cake eating contest gets in the way.
Not just string. You could use lasers to cut a cake.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could. If you had a powerful enough laser, that would be totally
reasonable. You could just use a spoon or a fork. It'd be kind of messy, but, you know.
Exactly.
Actually, have you guys heard about the laser cutting technology now? They're starting to use those in culinary arts. You can actually sculpt chocolate using a laser cutter.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to eat.
Let's wrap up this great set of questions from Natalie with one more true or false. So we got a 50-50 shot here.
Okay.
Quill pens were the most common writing tool during the early days of the Roman Empire. True or false?
False.
False.
Okay. Can you fill in the gap, though, Jim?
I think it was like graphite or chalk or something that they used.
I'm thinking stylus. You know, just carve into like wet clay.
I'm thinking lead. They used it in their pipes. They probably wrote with it, too.
Actually, we get all the way to Jeff, and it hits it. They were usually either made of reeds or metal with sharp tips for jotting things down. Mm. Quill pens did not come into play until just about the 6th century, so it's a very interesting twist historically there. Those are some great questions, Natalie. You always send us some...
They are good questions.
A full set of
still no ocean liner questions. I'm still waiting, but, you know.
I like those potpourri ones, though. Those are kind of cool.
Let's take a quick look as we wrap up our show here at the next thing on the list from, of course, the great Frank Burrows and his family, HEP favorites. Last time, you remember, we did fictional places you'd like to visit. This one's a little more simple and practical. What's your favorite department store to go to?
All right. I'm sentimental. I'm Hudson's.
That's too bad.
But it doesn't exist anymore. So what do you go to now?
I don't.
There is no such thing as a department store, is there?
I guess I'd have to say Macy's because there's not a lot of competition.
There was one in Oregon when I was growing up called Meyer and Frank that is sure out of business now, but it was my favorite department store. I mean, now they're Dan's right. I mean, what, Kohl's, JCPenney?
Yeah.
I'm kind of afraid that if Mara were here, she would have answered Amazon, and then that would have been like, good night, everyone.
Yeah.
Or actually, didn't she spend some time in Toronto? The Hudson Bay Company? Hudson.
Yeah. Hudson. The Bay.
That's right.
Barclay was wrong. To be is not to be perceived. To be is to be for sale on Amazon. That's my theory of existence now.
So true. So true. Anybody can get published. Yeah, it's kind of sad to hear a term like department store. I wonder if I would ask my kids, what's a department store, what the response would be. I mean, they know the word store. They know the word department. I'm not sure they've ever really put them together. I'm afraid we reached the end of our show for today, though, so I'd like to thank our panelists, Jeff.
See you later.
Jim.
Goodbye.
Dan.
Take care.
Beth.
Adios.
Dave.
See ya.
Now these words...
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of all the places where we live and work, but if we were actually here, we would be in the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. We're produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Meyer.